The Forgotten Realms, and Dungeons & Dragons as a game in general, are full of legendary figures and names, with pasts so storied that many of us know them simply through the cultural impact they've had over the 50 years the game has existed. Names like Mordenkainen, Dritz Duorden, Elminster, or Vecna. But a fan favorite of players of every background is Tasha, also known as Igwilv, the Witch Queen. Featured heavily in much of the game's promotional material, and the in-universe author of Tasha's Cauldron of Everything, arguably one of the best 5th edition supplements ever released, in my opinion. Tasha is a common name to be used at our game tables. The legendary daughter of Baba Yaga, author of the Demonomicon of Igwilv, lover of the demon lord Granst, and more. But for many of us, our knowledge of this legend stops there. Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to Lore Sleep, Secrets of the Forgotten Realms. Tasha is an incredibly well-known archmage for her creations and influence on the background of hundreds of campaigns, but her history has largely faded to obscurity over the more recent editions of Dungeons & Dragons. So tonight, I wanted to share the deep history of the Witch Queen, and perhaps inspire you to feature her or her exploits in your next campaign. Before hopping in, though, I do want to quickly note that this episode will contain major spoilers for the ending of the 5th edition adventure, The Wilds Beyond the Witchlight. So, if you are currently a player in that campaign, or plan to be a player in it soon, perhaps come back to this episode after you complete it. But with that said, I invite you to make yourselves comfortable and enjoy a well-earned night's sleep as I share with you another of the secrets of the Forgotten Realms. Aaron rolled his eyes as his daughter ran laps around her small bed, screaming in delight at her father's apparent annoyance with her antics. It was far too late for this kind of childish energy, and he was far too tired. "Celeste, if you don't go to bed now, the Witch Queen will snatch you in the night." Celeste's delighted screams quickly turned to a squeak of fear as she dove into her bed and buried herself beneath the covers. "I'm a good kid. The Witch Queen only comes for bad children who stay up too late, so she won't get me," she called out from the bundle of blankets, and Aaron stifled a laugh. "That's right. Good children who go to bed on time and do their chores in the morning have nothing to fear. So go to sleep, or she'll grab you by the toes." Celeste buried herself a little deeper in her blankets, before popping her sun-kissed face out and looking up at her father. "Dad, can you tell me a story about the Witch Queen? Why is she so scary?" Aaron rolled his eyes, sitting himself down on the floor next to the bed. "Sure thing, sweetheart, but you'd better be asleep when I get to the end of it."
"Okay, I'll be super sleepy."
Attagirl. Now, where to start? The Witch Queen has gone by many names over her centuries of long life. Natasha the Dark, Hearn of Ket, Igwilv, the Witch Queen of Perrinland, Queen of the Night, and most recently, Zablina, the Archfey of Prismir. And while these are her most well-known, they are simply a handful among countless others used in her multiversal travels to the Outer Planes and the many worlds of the Material Plane. Tasha was her preferred name for many, many years, though, and was the one that she used in her days as an adventurer while a member of the Company of Seven. As an Archmage, her contributions to the study of magic are substantial,
inventing such spells as Ensnarement, Lover's Call, Tasha's Mind Whip, Torment, and a fan favorite, Tasha's Hideous Laughter, which to this day is commonly used in Waterdeep as a magical trap to incapacitate intruders to high-security vaults. She is also the creator of many powerful magic items, such as Tasha's Atrocious Robe, Igwilv's Cauldron, and the legendary artifact, the Demonomicon of Igwilv. But before all of her many accomplishments, Tasha did not begin life as an Archmage. No, she certainly did get one hell of a head start on that front. As Tasha is a planeswalker of immense power, examining her story requires us to leave the Forgotten Realms altogether, instead turning to the Feywild and the Greyhawk world of Oerth. Tasha, or Natasha the Dark as she was known then, was the adopted daughter of Baba Yaga, the mother of all witches. The circumstances of Baba Yaga taking Natasha in are unknown, but we know she was born on Oerth and adopted very young. She is described as a beautiful human woman with smoky black hair and alabaster skin. She, along with Baba Yaga's other adoptive daughter, Elena the Fair, were instructed in magic from a very young age, eventually becoming near polar opposites of each other. Elena took her sorcery and used it as a force of good, healing animals that were injured near Baba Yaga's walking hut, or providing comfort and aid whenever possible to those who visited her adoptive mother. Natasha, in contrast, was influenced by Baba Yaga to walk a more sinister path, very much earning her title Natasha the Dark. Under the tutelage of her adoptive mother, Natasha learned the secrets of summoning demons from the abyss and using their power to further her own goals. Demons fascinated Natasha, and she took great pleasure in outwitting her summoned playthings and prodding them for knowledge on the abyss. Natasha and Elena were opposites in nearly every sense of the word. Where Elena studied protective and healing magic, Natasha studied destructive spells and the summoning of powerful creatures. Where Elena was kind and outgoing, Natasha was brash, jealous, and secretive. Where Elena was altruistic and gifted visitors magic and wealth when she could, Natasha was materialistic, vain, and paranoid. But their relationship somehow never escalated to violence. There certainly was no love lost between the adoptive sisters, but mutual respect for each other's power and for their shared mother kept them in line. Eventually, Natasha departed from the Feywild and returned to her home of Oerth, taking up residence in the borderlands of Ket and adopting the name Hura. She ensconced herself in a tower on the outskirts of the city of Lopala and began conducting deeper research into the studies of necromancy, the abyss, planar summoning and binding, and powerful magic that ensnared the mind. Over the course of several years, her experiments became more and more complex, requiring a great deal of rare and valuable materials. Commoners from Lopala vanished from the streets, abducted by demonic servants to serve as lab experiments, and vaults were raided for the wealth that they contained. Several in the city attempted to confront the witch, but to no avail. However, the final straw came when Hura raided the Vault of Daud, plundering an incredibly powerful magic artifact called Daud's Wondrous Lanthorn. A beautiful lantern wrought with the finest gold and a beautifully crafted framework set with huge jewels and crystal lenses. The lantern burned crushed gemstones to create an unwavering, pure flame, which would burn for a century before needing refueling. It also contained 7 crystal lenses, which individually contained spells such as Haste, Prismatic Spray, or Confusion, but could also be used together as a focus
for powerful rituals. Forced to flee from Ket by a veritable army of paladins bent on taking her head, Hura fled north to the free city of Greyhawk and changed her name once more, becoming the Tasha that many of us know today. It is there that she met Zagig Yirgarn, the Lord Mayor of Greyhawk, and an Archmage of great power, who would eventually earn the title the Mad Wizard. Zagig shared Tasha's fascination for demons and the Abyss, and Tasha saw in him a perfect target for her manipulations. It is here that Tasha truly begins to earn her reputation as a master manipulator and seductress. And when Zagig took Tasha to be his apprentice and lover, it was a massive scandal within the city. As powerful as the Archmage was, it seemed that he had the same fatal weakness as most men of power, the wiles of a woman. Through Tasha's influence, Zagig eventually began disregarding the complaints of his city's citizens, turning a deaf ear and the occasional malicious polymorph on those who openly spoke of his scandalous relationship with his apprentice. With Zagig's instruction, Tasha's obsession with the Abyss flourished and grew rapidly. She focused her studies solely on the Abyss and its denizens, with Zagig sharing his hard-earned knowledge on the denizens of the Outer Planes, their strengths, and their weaknesses. Several years later, the pair were successful in summoning and binding Fraz Urblu, the Demon Prince of Deception, imprisoning his essence within a statue in the depths of Castle Greyhawk. For his part, Zagig intended for his apprentice to learn the care and caution necessary when handling summoned fiends of such power. Tasha, however, had other plans. In secret, she continued meeting with the Demon Prince, taking instructions from him on the Abyss and its denizens, extracting countless secrets from the whispered lies and half-truths the Prince of Deception gave while he vied for his freedom. It was also during this time that Tasha became a member of the Company of Seven, an adventuring group founded by Zagig and boasting several figures who would eventually become legendary heroes or demigods. Among these are some names many of us recognize, such as Nolzer, Qual, and Heward, creators of magic items like Nolzer's marvelous pigments, Qual's feather token, and Heward's handy haversack. The Company of Seven was an extremely successful adventuring group, and over the course of a decade, Tasha and her companions plundered ruins, fought incredible foes, and became fabulously famous and wealthy. Tasha is documented to have had an incredibly morbid sense of humor during these adventures, and this trait seems to have carried on through her career, as seen in her footnotes in the book Tasha's Cauldron of Everything. The adventures of the Company of Seven eventually culminated in the party discovering the lost Flan Citadel of Varalos, and returning to the city of Greyhawk with wagon loads of wondrous treasures. Shortly after, the Company of Seven disbanded, though the reason is unknown to all but its members. Shortly after this disbanding, Tasha deemed that she had wrung everything of value from Zagig and Fraz Urblu. During the night, Tasha pillaged her loving master's library, stealing his spells, writings, and much of the treasure that he had earned from the Citadel of Varalos. Chief among the stolen loot was Zagig's crowning achievement, the Tome of Zix. The tome was a treatise on his decades of study and spellcraft, and Tasha would turn it into the basis of the famed Demonomicon of Igwilv, refining his work and expanding it with her own. To her great pleasure, she was not only robbing Zagig of his possessions, but also his accomplishments. Tasha fled west with her plunder, arriving in the Yatil Mountains and entering a long-lost dungeon created by the ancient wizard Sojkanth. The rest of the world believed Sojkanth to be long dead and forgotten, but Tasha knew better. She had learned from Frasor Blue that Sojkanth was in fact alive, his lifespan greatly extended by virtue of being a half-demon, the son of Frasor Blue himself. Armed with this knowledge and her great skill in binding rituals, Tasha entered the dungeon complex, easily moving through the traps and perils it presented, until she encountered the wizard himself. There, the pair engaged in a monumental contest of wills, each attempting to subdue the other with powerful compulsion magic. Tasha emerged victorious, binding Sojkanth to her service completely. She then repurposed the dungeon to be her own lair, and once again adopted a new name, Igwilv. With the aid of Sojkanth's centuries of knowledge, Igwilv's power continued to grow exponentially, and her lust for more grew with it. She set her sights on proving herself superior to her former master and replicating the ritual that had bound Frasor Blue, an incredible feat that had taken everything the pair was capable of. Now, she would do it herself and summon an even more powerful demon prince. Progress was painfully slow, and Igwilv found herself faced with failure after failure, often resulting in her being forced into fearsome battles with powerful demons who the binding rituals failed to constrain. But she was persistent, and refused to accept these failures. Years passed, and Sojkanth continued to serve and pass on his vast knowledge of the Abyss, as well as secrets confided in him by his father that Igwilv had failed to obtain before. Armed with new realizations, she attempted the ritual again, and succeeded. Doing what was thought to be impossible, Igwilv summoned and bound Grost, the Dark Prince, patron of tyrants, lord of forbidden pleasures. The demon prince appeared to Igwilv in his true form, a darkly handsome, ebony-skinned man, nearly 9 feet tall, with slightly pointed ears, yellow fangs, and six-fingered hands. Furious at the witch's audacity, Grost at first attempted to break free of the binding, but Igwilv once again proved her wiles and skill in manipulation. She praised his beauty and power, and coaxed him into an agreement that he might one day win his freedom, in exchange for his knowledge and power. Although he agreed hesitantly, this would be the beginning of one of, if not the most, storied dysfunctional romances of all time. The Igwilv-Grost affair is a favorite among bards, and can be readily heard in taverns across the multiverse. Unlike the bindings of Frasor Blue, who was bound in a statue, and Sojkanth, who was confined within the ancient caverns of Igwilv's lair, the Dark Prince's physical form was able to move freely wherever Igwilv commanded, and his handsome visage fell under her gaze every day. As she pried information from him to expand on the Tome of Zix and create the first entries of her Demonomicon, she quickly found that she could tolerate the presence of no one else but Grost. He alone was worthy of her attention. His lessons began to focus less on the secrets of the Abyss, and more on the secrets of seduction. As a demon prince of lust, Grost could expand even further upon Igwilv's already impressive repertoire of manipulations and the clouding of people's minds through desire. As time went on, they stopped being lessons, and the two became lovers, soon giving birth to their first child, Ayaz.
as Igwilv's power grew with the knowledge and gifts granted by Grost, including a type of immortality that drastically slowed her aging, she began desiring a dominion of her own. No longer content to study in her caverns, she began gathering followers. Cultists who worshipped Grost flocked to her, and her army of demons continued to grow. When Ayaz came of age, it was time to act. Ayaz became the general commanding Igwilv's armies and leading them in the field. Tutored in war and magic by his parents, he was nigh unstoppable. Huge swaths of the country of Perrinland fell to the host, as Ayaz conquered and plundered in his mother's name. Igwilv, the Witch Queen of Perrinland, looked on in pride as her power, wealth, and domain grew. Uninterested in governing the lands she now ruled, Igwilv stripped the lands of their treasures to support her research into new magic, leaving them destitute and starving. During this time, she gave birth to her second child, Drelzna. Not much is known about Drelzna, but it is heavily speculated that she was not the child of Grost, as her brother Ayaz was. At some point, Igwilv's daughter was infected with the curse of vampirism, a fate that Igwilv was desperate to reverse. She experimented for years using her prized possession, Daud's Wondrous Lantern, certain that such a powerful artifact must have the power to lift the curse. When she failed, Igwilv became discontented with her burgeoning empire's reach being insufficient to find a cure. If her lantern alone could not work, then perhaps the land of its creation could. She commanded Ayaz to turn her armies towards Ket, intent on razing every city they passed until a cure was found. It was at this time, nearly 3 decades after his summoning, that Grost began suspecting that he would never be released from his agreement with the Witch Queen. As she placed her daughter into a magical stasis in the depths of her lair to delay the curse, Grost began to plot his escape. Perhaps Igwilv's belief that she had mastered Grost in the same way she had enthralled Zagig led to her complacency, or perhaps she succumbed to the seductions of the Dark Prince without realizing. Either way, the betrayal of her lover came as a shock to her. Thanks to her frequent summoning rituals, a rift into the depths of the abyss formed and swelled dangerously beneath Igwilv's sanctum. Grost proposed a means of sealing the breach by using the bound essence of the neglected Sojkanth, who Igwilv had largely ignored since she summoned Grost. She concurred, and when she began the ritual, the half-demon that she had believed cowed and defenseless lashed out with overwhelming ferocity. Grost reveled in the struggles of his mistress, and when she finally emerged, greatly weakened but victorious, he struck out without mercy. According to the songs of the bards, their battle is said to have shaken the foundations of the Yatil Mountains, for the couple's passion fueled their hatred just as powerfully as it did their desires. Ayaz attempted to come between his parents and end their struggle, but as a result, was torn apart by them, splitting into his demon and human halves as 2 separate individuals. Igwilv used every spell, artifact, and ally she could employ, and the battle left her nearly completely drained. None know whether Grost broke free of his bonds and fled to the abyss, sparing his former lover as a final act of mercy, or if Igwilv struck down his material form and banished him. But the hulking, red, demonic half of Ayaz fled with his father, while the decrepit, mannequin-like human half remained with his mother. Igwilv was left shattered, nearly completely stripped of her power. Wounded and drained,
and with her son equally sundered, she quickly found herself unable to stop the rebellion that boiled over within Perrinland. The populace, who had been robbed of all wealth and treated as mere slaves for decades, took advantage of their tyrant's weakness and stormed her lair, and Aegwilf was forced to retreat. She used what remaining political influence she had to help her son establish himself in the neighboring country, passing himself as the son of a noble who died under mysterious circumstances, before going into hiding. Aias would go on to conquer the country with such brutal efficiency that he impressed his father, who was unable to return to the material plane for 100 years after his battle with Aegwilf. Gronst would gift his son demonic artifacts and allies, allowing Aias the Evil to become a tyrant to rival his mother, eventually ascending to the status of demigod. Alone once more, Aegwilf was certain that Gronst would not forget the abuse he suffered at her hands, despite whatever bond they had shared. As she struggled to regain her power and retake arcane artifacts that she had lost when she fled Perrinland, the Witch Queen lived in fear that Gronst's agents would find her. And soon enough, they did. Aegwilf was dragged away to the Abyss, to Gronst's domain of Azeroth, which spans the 45th, 46th, and 47th layers of the Abyss. Now on his home field, Aegwilf found the board well and truly flipped, as she became subject to Gronst's cruel whims. But even so, the bond the two had formed on the material plane persisted. None know exactly what happened in the dungeons beneath Gronst's city of Zelatar, and Aegwilf refuses to speak of it to anyone. But a new understanding seemed to be reached between the two. Aegwilf often strode beside the Dark Prince within his palace, often publicly seen to be pregnant. Such pregnancies were inhumanly brief, though, and Gronst took great pains to keep the identities and whereabouts of his new offspring secret from his enemies. Many believed that these half-demons would disperse to the many worlds of the material plane as spies for their father, or pawns sowing chaos and depravity in his name. Gronst and Aegwilf had come to the understanding that they loved nothing more than hating each other, and they hated nothing more than loving each other. Much to the dismay of the Dark Prince's consorts and servants, Aegwilf was set free to roam the halls of the Argent Palace and scheme at the side of her one-time prisoner, lover, and recent captor. Aegwilf served as advisor to Gronst, and her knowledge helped guide his campaigns of manipulation and conquest across the multiverse. Aegwilf found that her mastery of planar summoning also worked in reverse, and frequently banished trusted advisors of Gronst's enemies to the material plane, where they would wreak havoc at being unable to return to their masters. When Gronst waged war against other demon princes, she could summon entire legions of lesser demons away from the battlefield, depositing them on the material plane and allowing Gronst's armies to easily overwhelm his foes. These displaced legions would appear elsewhere across Oerth, Eberron, and Toril, enraged and bloodthirsty, leading to the fall of several unprepared nations. While love is not the right word to describe what the pair had, their relationship continued to deepen. Gronst became overcome with jealousy for any fiend that had partnered with Aegwilf in the past. He viciously attacked Frasir Blu solely because the Prince of Deception had also been Aegwilf's prisoner and plaything at one time, a privilege that Gronst no longer wished to share with anyone. But the pair were forever wary of the other's plots and deceptions, and trust was in short supply, if it existed at all. Nevertheless, the couple often held fast out of pure spite for those who sought to destroy their dysfunctional bond.
Grotzt would often dangle Ygwilv before his foes like a prize, daring them to be seduced by her, and then laying them low with secrets that Ygwilv had pried from them during pillow talk. Throughout every one of these trysts, Ygwilv bragged and prodded at Grotzt's jealousy, stoking it higher and higher, every time leaving it unclear whether she truly would betray him. The halls of the Argent Palace bubbled with rumors, some born from the pair's twisted treatment of each other, others placed by political and romantic rivals. Many sought to drive a wedge between the Dark Prince and the Witch Queen, terrified that if in the future the pair became truly united in purpose, they may well have the potential to conquer the entire abyss, layer by layer. Spite pulled the couple through it all, but eventually, one demon did succeed. Seeking to spite Grotzt and earn Ygwilv's aid with schemes involving her son Ayuz, the demon called Tourney the Merciless neutralized the magic that held Ygwilv under Grotzt's power. She immediately turned on her lover, and a cataclysmic battle raged between the two. However, neither was willing to deliver a decisive blow. Instead, they laid waste to the halls of the palace, destroyed priceless treasures, slew favored servants and concubines, and traded venomous barbs in unholy tongues. Each of them also held back some of their power, recalling the weakened states they had both entered after their last battle. Finally, the battle concluded in Grotzt granting Ygwilv safe passage from Azagrat. At his order, a host of demonic servants conveyed her research and amassed relics, the ones that hadn't been destroyed, to a manor within a demiplane on the Astral Sea, complete with an orchard of black-leaved trees and an ancient gray gazebo. A rather amicable parting as far as demonic separations go. Now in the aftermath, the pair consider themselves even for the suffering and torments they placed on the other. Few secrets remain between them, which would be cause for concern if not for the mutually assured destruction. Instead, the two seem to maintain a distant relationship, starting casual ploys against each other, using agents that they expect will fail in their task as a kind of mutual enjoyment for the former lovers. Their rivalry now exists only to remind them that there were once good times. What passes for affection between them are murderous plots and cunning traps. Both will readily offer aid to anyone plotting against the other, but you can never be certain if such aid is genuine, and the pair is never certain either. Many adventurers have learned the anniversary of Ygwilv and Grotzt's final separation the hard way, when their supposed plot results on them being dropped at the front steps of the Argent Palace as a gift, and not a very precious one at that. The many spawn of the pair wander the multiverse, for the most part beholden to just one parent, and used as pawns in their schemes against one another from time to time. Ygwilv remained in her manor on the Astral Sea for some time, slowly regaining her power while she plotted her next moves. Her eyes turned back to Oerth, seeking to support her son and continue searching for a way to cure her daughter's vampirism. When she finally did return, around 80 years after she had been taken, it was her dismay to find that the lost caverns of Sojkanth had been rediscovered while she was imprisoned in the abyss, and that a group of adventurers had sacked the caverns, slain Drelzna, now a full vampire, and absconded with her hidden treasures. Full of fury, she discovered that the adventurers had been sponsored by the Circle of Eight, a group of wizards led by the Archmage Mordenkainen, and her plans for patient politics were replaced by a desire to raise the world to the ground. Raising an army of fiends, undead, and monsters
Ygwyllv launched an invasion on the northern lands of Flannes, but was once again thwarted by adventurers sponsored by the Circle of Eight. These adventurers, having been told of the Witch Queen's advance, had traveled to a forgotten demiplane and recovered an artifact known as the Crook of Rau, a powerful item created specifically to banish and protect against creatures of the lower planes. Although she was defeated, as the Crook banished her armies back to the Abyss, Ygwyllv managed to damage the artifact, placing a powerful curse on it. Though it has once again been lost, should the artifact be found again, the curse will open a portal to the Abyss and spill out every fiend ever banished by the Crook, a process that will supposedly take nearly 2 decades and would surely mean the destruction of the world. After her defeat, Ygwyllv retreated to her domain on the Astral Sea once again, observing the newly begun Greyhawk Wars from afar. Her son Ayus led his own armies during the war, and Ygwyllv would occasionally offer guidance when it suited her, but such interference was rare. Instead, she began plotting another way to stage an army in secret, turning her eyes to the skies above Oerth and its moon, Luna. She established a research laboratory on the face of the moon within the abandoned castle of the wizard Tensor, a recently deceased member of the Circle of Eight. There, she began summoning new legions of demons to serve her, and progressing her studies into the arcane with the hopes of destroying the Circle of Eight and its people. A decade later, right when she was about to launch her second invasion, she was once again thwarted. It turns out that before his death, Tensor had created several clones of himself as contingencies, and one such clone had resided in the castle on the moon. It alerted the Circle of Eight of Ygwyllv's actions, and another group of adventurers were dispatched, defeating Ygwyllv and banishing her back to the Outer Planes. Vexed at her repeated defeats after so much planning and effort, Ygwyllv recused herself from the world of Oerth, contenting herself to watch for an opportunity to return and cause destruction. In the meantime, she turned her eyes elsewhere in the multiverse, seeking out other worlds to explore and gain power from, including the Forgotten Realms. She eventually created a new lair for herself within the gray wastes of Hades, on the banks of the River Styx, where she took on 4 Arcanoloth apprentices and began working to build her power by undermining the demon princes of the Abyss and subsuming their power. She spent several centuries in the lower planes building power, eventually aiding a coalition of adventurers, Eladrin, and demons in a plot to overthrow Demigorgon, the Prince of Demons. While she did not participate in the battle directly, she did provide vital transportation to the armies of Gwynherf, Paladin of the Eladrin, Malkinthet, the Queen of Succubi, and Orcus, the Demon Prince of Undeath. The battle was long and fierce, eventually culminating with Demigorgon's death and the crowning of a new Prince of Demons. However, the change in crown was very short-lived. As though Demigorgon was slain on his home plane, Ygwyllv used the magic of an iron flask to capture his soul before it dissipated. What exactly she did with the iron flask is unknown, but the fact stands that Demigorgon returned soon after and reclaimed his crown, and remains the Prince of Demons to this day. Perhaps as a result of the resurrection of Demigorgon, Ygwyllv's many enemies began uniting to see her destroyed completely, and she decided the time was prudent to return to the realm where she was raised, the Feywild. Using her great power, she carved out the realm of Prismyr, raised a magnificent palace straight out of a fairy tale, and set about establishing herself as the benevolent Archfey Ziblina of Prismyr, avatar of mercy for destitute mortals.
Her hair turned from smoke black to a pure white, and her beauty was magnified in the nature of the Fae. Such a complete change of character from the evil and vengeful Witch Queen seemed to do the trick of throwing her enemies off of her trail. And decades passed with her happily greeting guests bold enough to enter the Feywild for her help. And over time, the innate magic of the Feywild transformed Zablina into a true Archfey, not just one in name, granting her true immortality and even more power than she had garnered from her time in the Abyss. She gained the power to grant wishes to mortals that she deemed deserving, and those who arrived in the halls of Lavaglia, better known as the Palace of Heart's Desire, could almost always count on the Archfey's assistance. Zablina spared no expense in decorating her palace, as well as filling it with enough puzzles and tricks to make even the most clever Fey balk. Mementos from her past lives were displayed in secret rooms, and she still maintained a hidden study where she could add to her Demonomicon. She also kept a hidden tower with a treasury of all her material wealth, including the Vorpal Sword Snickersnack, to add to the defenses of the castle should her abyssal enemies ever find her. She tamed a ferocious dragon called the Jabberwock, as well as an enormous owl named Bloodybeak. Zablina's facade was not perfect, and her closest allies would sometimes see the cracks, flashes of arrogance and cruelty that conflicted with her kindly persona. But most merely chalked up the behavior to the mercurial nature of Archfey. Everyone knew Fey were fickle creatures, so why would she be any different? Over a handful of centuries, Zablina reconnected with three of her sisters, the Hags of the Hourglass Coven. True-born daughters of Baba Yaga, the Hags were intensely jealous of Zablina's power, believing her undeserving because she had merely been adopted by their mother. But the Coven was not powerful enough to take her on directly, so instead waited patiently for the opportunity to overthrow Zablina, acting as advisors in her court. That opportunity came when an adventuring group called the League of Malevolence arrived at the palace. The evil sorcerer Kellic was covetous of the Staff of Power wielded by his arch-enemy, the good-aligned wizard Ringelrun. When Kellic discovered clues about Zablina's true identity as Igwilv the Witch Queen, he concocted a foolish plan to blackmail the Archfey into obtaining the staff for him. However, he was betrayed by his party member, the warlock Skyla, whose patron was Baba Yaga herself. Through her, Baba Yaga instructed the Hourglass Coven to thwart this plot, and so the rival adventuring group Valor's Call were close behind when the League entered Prismere. Both factions arrived at the Palace of Heart's Desire at the same time and clashed there. While Zablina was distracted with the battle, the Hourglass Coven used her powerful artifact, Igwilv's Cauldron, to freeze everyone in the palace but themselves in temporal stasis, overthrowing their adoptive sister and seizing control of her domain. Their victory was very short-lived, however, as a few short months later, yet another group of adventurers would enter Prismere via the Witchlight Carnival, an extraplanar carnival sponsored by Zablina to travel the worlds of the multiverse, and report back anything interesting they saw to the Archfey. The adventurers systematically removed the Hourglass Coven from play, freeing the members of Valor's Call and defeating the League of Malevolence, before using the power of a unicorn horn to free Zablina from the cauldron's magic. The adventurers were richly rewarded and promptly set on their way. To this day, Zablina continues to rule over Prismere as a benevolent fairy godmother, occasionally granting power to warlocks in order to keep tabs on the outside worlds. But who's to say how long the charade will go on? Perhaps she will remain a benevolent figure far into the future, undoing the centuries of injustice she caused on Earth. Or perhaps she is merely biding her time, waiting for the right opportunity for Yggwilth the Witch Queen to return and rain destruction on the multiverse. Only time will tell. Before we end for tonight, I wanted to briefly discuss the real-world inspiration for Tasha. Created by Gary Gygax, he cited the Finnish epic Kalevala as his inspiration for Yggwilth the Witch Queen. Truly a deep pull, the Kalevala is the national epic of Finland. The epic is a compilation of poetry, oral folklore, and mythology compiled by Elias Lonrot and published in 1849. It is an incredibly long work, over 22,000 verses in its unabridged version, but if you have the time and patience to read through classic poetry, the English translation by John Martin Crawford is available for free online. I myself only glanced through the relevant passages, but quickly discovered why this epic is so influential. The epic is also cited to be a heavy influence on several major names in the fantasy writing world, including J.R.R. Tolkien. I certainly plan to make a point of reading the entire epic in the near future. But back on topic, the Kalevala begins with the traditional Finnish creation myth, before diving into the many epics and heroics of figures from Finnish legend. Gygax references one character as Tasha's inspiration, that character being Loki, the mistress of the North. She is a powerful witch and the shamanistic matriarch of the people of Pohjola, a rival people to Kalevala, the people of the epic's protagonist, Väinämöinen. Forgive my pronunciation, I don't know Finnish. At times benevolent, but most times antagonistic, Lohi is the source of most of the conflict within the epic, either directly through her actions seeking the Sampo, a mystical machine capable of creating great wealth, or indirectly through the actions of her many daughters, or rather, the actions of the idiotic men attempting to seduce her daughters. Gygax references Lohi as another name that Yggwilth took during her multiversal travels, implying that the figure from the epic is the same as the one in his campaigns. Yggwilth first appeared in the adventure module The Lost Caverns of Sojkanth in 1982, along with her famous Demonomicon of Yggwilth. So, how did Yggwilth become the Tasha that we all know and love today? Through the power of retcons and the letter of a young girl. According to an interview with Gygax in 2003, many of the names given to his spells came from the players in his campaigns, or from fans of the game who wrote him suggestions for new additions. Tasha was a young girl who wrote him letters in crayon, asking him to make a spell involving laughter. Hence, Tasha's hideous laughter was born. No further context was given to who Tasha was within the lore of Dungeons & Dragons, but in 1984, the adventure Baba Yaga's Hut was published in Dragon Magazine number 83, introducing Natasha the Dark. It is unclear if Natasha was intended to be the same person as Tasha when she was created, but in the 2007 adventure Expedition to the Ruins of Greyhawk, it is confirmed that Tasha was an alias of Yggwilth while she was a member of the Company of Seven. Later that year, Dragon Magazine number 359 highlighted that Natasha, Tasha, and Yggwilth were all one and the same. Aaron sighed as he finished his tale, rubbing a palm over his bleary eyes as he thought about returning to his own bed. Glancing down, he gave a satisfied smile as he watched the slow, rhythmic breathing of his sleeping daughter. He had no idea when she had finally passed out, but he probably could have stopped his story 15 minutes ago and gone to bed himself. But if it made his daughter happy, he would do just about anything. As he slowly stepped into the hallway of their cabin and closed the door, his forearm began to itch with the reminder of that vow. Yes, almost anything, he reminded himself, as the Fey runes tattooed across his body began to give off a soft cyan glow. He gasped as the air around him shifted and the sensation of entering the Feywild overcame him. He would never get used to that transition, as if all of his senses had been dialed up to 11. Colors more vibrant than his eyes could process, and smells so thick you could almost see them. Erin, my dear, you really should find a better bedtime story for that precious child. Such an old and dark tale is hardly fitting for one her age. Erin spun softly and took a knee before his patron, not daring to look Zablina in the eyes. Perhaps I should, my lady. But it is her favorite. No matter how many tales I spin, she always comes back to you. Zablina's laughter was like the sound of glass shards gently colliding, as she took a seat within the rose garden he had been summoned to. Well, perhaps that is for the best. When she eventually joins my service, it will mean a lot less explaining on my part. Erin held back a sigh at the reminder of his pact, but he still had nearly a decade before that came to pass. Celeste would be a grown woman before she was called to honor her father's deal for power, and by then, he would be able to explain his reasoning. She may hate him for it eventually, but for now, it allowed them safety. As you say, my lady, and I am ever grateful for your aid. May I inquire as to the purpose of my summons? With respect, it is very late at home, and my daughter begins her lessons tomorrow. Always to the point. Perhaps one day we can leave your daughter with her tutors and school you on proper conversational etiquette. Again, that tinkling glass laughter echoed softly through the garden, and Erin grit his teeth in annoyance. But I suppose I can move past the pleasantries for tonight. A certain succubus has recently reappeared in your old home, asking a few rather uncomfortable questions of the neighbors there. I simply wished to warn you that you may have company soon, and remind you that you have nothing to fear. So long as you and your daughter remain inside the cabin, you will be protected. But do remember that should you leave, you may not be able to resist her temptations. And in my experience, as enjoyable and entertaining as a succubus is, the aftermath is almost never worth the price. I'm sure you don't need a second infernal daughter running around, yes? Erin knelt, tense as a drawn bow, his mind racing at the possibilities. Alejandra was back, which could mean just about anything, but all of it was bad news. I understand. Thank you for warning me, mistress. I'll be sure to act accordingly. As you should. Well, that is all. Sleep well, and keep your ears open, Zablina crooned, and Erin felt himself falling as his senses returned to normal. With a soft thud, he was back in his home, the cabin nestled deep in the high forest. As he came to his feet, finding the familiar sounds of crickets and owls, he scrubbed a hand over his face. A pair of seductresses had laid claim to him, and his daughter was unknowingly caught in the middle of it. He made a mental reminder that if there was ever a next time, no matter the circumstances, he was going to keep it in his pants. This was going to be a long night. Thank you for listening to Lore Sleep, Secrets of the Forgotten Realms. If you enjoyed it, please consider leaving a review on Spotify. It greatly helps me and the show. Official art for the show was created by @natartisticweeb on Twitter, with music created by Fayfield Productions. Research material for this episode came from The Lost Caverns of Sojkenth by Gary Gygax, Return of the Eight by Roger Moore, Expedition to the Ruins of Greyhawk by Jason Bullman, James Jacobs, and Eric Mona, Fiendish Codex Volume 1, Hordes of the Abyss by Ed Stark, James Jacobs, and Eric Mona, Enemies of My Enemy by Wolfgang Bauer from Dungeon Magazine number 149, Prince of Demons by Greg A. Vaughn from Dungeon Magazine number 150, The Dancing Hut by Roger Moore from Dragon Magazine number 83, The Demonomicon of Igwilv by Owen K.C. Stevens and Gary Holian from Dragon Magazine number 336, Demonomicon of Igwilv Apocrypha by James Jacobs from Dragon Magazine number 359, History Check, The Igwilv Gratzda Fair by John Rosamongo from Dragon Magazine number 414, Tasha's Cauldron of Everything by Jeremy Crawford, The Wild Beyond the Witchlight by Christopher Perkins, Kalevala, compiled by Elias Lonrot, English translation by John Martin Crawford, with reference to the Forgotten Realms Wiki and the Great Library of Greyhawk. This podcast is written, recorded, and produced by Mark Steele. If you enjoy my voice and work, please feel free to check out my website, marksteele.com, or follow me on Twitter @SteeleVA to see more of my voice acting, as well as the games, animations, and audiobooks I'm involved in. That's @STIEHLVA. Inquiries or suggestions for future episodes can also be sent to me at marksteeleva@gmail.com. Thank you again for listening, and good night.